And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Ben Anderson, Jake Hatch filling in for Jake Scott. What's going on, Jake?
Not too much. I always like filling in because it's just easy. It's still Jake and Ben.
Still Jake and Ben.
So this is the thing.
Jake Scott is a little family vacay, celebrating the Easter holiday. Our kids are on spring break.
Spring breaking it a little bit, yeah.
So enjoying. He's enjoying a little family time, so he'll be back with us tomorrow. But I always appreciate you filling in. Big show today coming up at 11 o'clock. We're going to talk to Tim Lacombe, give us a breakdown on the latest with the Utah Jazz, plus what we saw from the NCAA tournament over the weekend. NC State still dancing. Yeah. One of the best stories I've seen in my lifetime. As far as, you know, we've seen some of these VCUs and smaller teams make these
UCLA
runs.
UCLA made a run like this not too long ago, but yeah.
I mean, considering NC State had to win five straight games in the ACC tournament, notoriously one of the toughest, if not the toughest, college basketball tournament or conference tournament up there with the Big 12, to make it and now to just keep dancing and just plowing through everybody and playing as well as they have has been very fun to watch.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you, as I think I did when I was filling in for Sarah not too long ago. NC State to win the ACC, they're one of six teams in the conference who have a national title in their history. The other five teams they had to play to get into the tournament all had national titles on their resume as well. So they didn't run through the dregs of the ACC. They had to go through the top dogs.
Yeah, it wasn't like Duke and North Carolina all got eliminated on the first day and they got to avoid them. No, they just beat everybody.
And they've carried it forward. DJ Burns, by the way, if you have not watched this kid play, he is worth the price of admission. Nikola Jokic last night apparently was late to getting to his media session because he's watching him do his thing. So it's been a really fun run for them. And the whole thing about Alabama football school making their first Final Four, well, hey, things happen when you invest money in those programs.
Been fun games. Been fun games overall. Purdue got the win as well. UConn is crushing everybody and still looks like the overwhelming favorite to win. But the Final Four is set up, so excited to see how it looks in quality teams. I don't think many people had NC State getting this far.
No, they didn't. And that's the fun part about it. And that's the glory and kind of the majesty of what this tournament entails, Ben, is you have teams that come out of seemingly nowhere like an NC State. This is a program, the last time they were in the Final Four, they won the whole dang thing. That's the whole Jim Valvano, 1983, running around the court in the pit down there in New Mexico without somebody to hug, trying to figure out what he was doing. But that is where I think we all get sucked into this tournament, and the fact that there's talk of the SEC wanting to change who gets in and the like, just leave it how it is.
Yeah, just leave it up.
Just stop.
It's fine. Alabama, low-key having a very, was it 1998, University of Utah run, where Brandon Miller gets drafted number two overall last year. Mm-hmm. Their best basketball prospect they've had in a very long time. And they're a good school, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Jazz have two players in their backcourt from Alabama. There are plenty of Alabama NBA players, but Brandon Miller's the best of the bunch. He leaves, number two overall pick, just like Keith Van Horn, and now they go on a Final Four run. And they weren't able to do that last year. In fact, I don't think they'd ever... I think they'd only won one Sweet 16.
I think so, yeah.
Historically?
This is Alabama does not have a strong basketball tradition. Nate Oates, their head coach, they just locked him up. They're going to pay him a bunch of money going forward.
Save so much with Saban. they don't have to pay anymore.
And there was the running joke online all weekend long. Hey, now that Saban retired, they finally got out of the way of the basketball program. Yeah. So it's fun to see what they're doing. And yeah, it shows that traditional powerhouses in some sports, while their tradition may not exist in other sports, you can change that. Nate Oates, he's going to be one of the highest paid coaches moving forward, and the Alabama administration thinking right now, the fact that they've already locked up that contract extension, like, yeah, good thing we did it right now.
And the nice thing, and I don't want to say Alabama doesn't have notable players. It does, but not the way you have on these other teams. But, I mean, you talked about DJ Burns, who's become a household name.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Edey is a household name because he is such a unique basketball player.
PK's going to get mad at me if I don't say Zach Bake Edey. Baked Edey.
Baked
Edey. That's what he's been going with for the last week or so.
Because he's 7'4", he's so dominant. Big. He's truly dominant. And then Donovan Klingon for UConn is equally dominant as a big man and was great in their last game. So, personally, I am rooting for UConn to beat Alabama and Purdue to beat the NC State, and I know those are the two number one seeds. That's not as fun, but I want to see Donovan Klingon going up against Zach Edey in the championship game, the two biggest and probably the two best players right now still alive in college basketball.
Well, the thing about it is it's been kind of set up for this also. There have been two of, if not the two best teams in the entire game all season long. So yeah, it's set up with the bracket, with them on opposite sides. I'm with you. I want to see those two squaring off because it feels like, and Klingon's getting a lot more of the love with the NBA side of things.
Yeah.
I'm coming around a little more. I'll get your thought on this, Ben. Is Zach Edey changing your mind about his prospects as a pro based on how he's playing in this postseason? Because I remember last year watching him and I was like, okay, yeah, he is a stiff. He is going to be a second round pick and we'll see what happens. But it feels like he's transformed a little bit in my mind. What do you think?
I would be stunned if he's not a first rounder.
Okay.
And I think I have said, I could see him having a decade long career. Now, he's a specialist. The same way we got to kind of change our opinions. Like Sam Merrill's a specialist in the NBA,
oh, yeah,
right? He comes
yeah.
in, plays 10 minutes a game. He's stretches the floor, and he's going to knock down a couple of threes. And just as long as he's on the floor, you just kind of have to always be mindful of what he does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit of how we need to view a player like Zach Edey, which is he's a specialist. He is so enormous. He is so big. You have to change what you do when he is on the floor. Now, both teams do. The offense does, and the defense does, because he's not very quick. So you're going to have to, if other teams go small, you're going to have to punish them on the other side by giving him the ball and letting him score every time. Otherwise, there's going to be some really ugly stretches in the NBA with Zach Edey on the floor when you can play a true five out. And they're going to beat him either off the dribble, from the perimeter, or they're just going to stand outside and shoot threes. But, man, I mean, you just can't argue with what he's done. In the last four games just in the tournament, he has a 30-point game, a 40-point game, a 27-point game, and a 23-point game. He's also grabbed 21 rebounds, 14 rebounds, 14 rebounds, and 16 rebounds. He's awesome. He is dominating the way he's supposed to. And then what I like about him, and I think this is a huge plus, which you don't see every night, he really cares. Like his care factor is through the roof. And if you're 7 feet tall and you like sports, he's a multi-sport athlete, mm-hmm. grew up playing hockey and baseball and had to switch over to basketball because
the idea of him playing hockey, man.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of 7'4" hockey players.
Yeah,
he's an athlete, mm-hmm. so I like that about him. And then he likes sports, which is a really huge plus. And he's a pro. I mean, he's worked really hard to improve his game. So I imagine, again, he's going to keep getting better. And when you're that size, you have that touch, and you want to play hard, you want to play, you're going to find a way to make it in the NBA, and teams will find a way to employ him.
Well, and I watched, so I was at the Minnesota Timberwolves Jazz game a couple weeks back, and I had forgotten that Luka Garza was on the Timberwolves mm-hmm. roster. You remember him, when he was in college, he was a back-to-the-basket guy,
yep.
and everybody was like, okay, he's not going to translate to the NBA level. Watching him play for the Minnesota Timberwolves, where he is coming off the bench, and he's a guy who's making threes from the perimeter, he's kind of an energy guy, I was like, okay, well, yeah, he may have been, some thought he was a little bit of a specialist, and he still is to a degree, but he's transformed his game. And that's got to be kind of the same thought here for a guy like Zach Edey. He's going to have to obviously transform in some respects, but you're right. At 7'4", what do they list him at weight-wise?
Oh, he's got to be 305.
He's huge.
Yeah, he's got to be something like that.
Huge does not do him justice because you just can't slow him down. So, yes, it is going to transform how opposing teams will go about defending when he's on the court, and that can be an advantage. It may not be where he's playing 30 minutes a night as a starter in the NBA, Ben, but when he's out there, the lineup for a team, guess what? We all talk about versatility in the NBA. The one thing that Zach Edey would offer a team is versatility with a whole different look offensively and defensively that, as you mentioned, it forces the other team to say, crap, we got to completely change the game plan here.
And we're having a little bit of a moment with the super big players coming back into the NBA. You know, and I'm not going to compare him to Wimby or Chet Holmgren because he doesn't play at all similar to those two, as athletic as they are. But we are getting back to the point where the league is getting so big at the skill positions that size is becoming even a bigger premium again in the middle with big 7-footers who protect the rim. And Zach Edey's one of those guys. So Excited to see what he does at the next level, but he's had a very fun tournament. He's been enjoyable to watch, as has Donovan Kling, as we mentioned. And we will see if anybody actually gives UConn a game. I'm not convinced they will. They're up 44-18 at halftime, it feels like, every game.
Did you see that 30-0 run that they put on?
Crazy.
That doesn't happen, and they just made it look routine. That was the incredible part about that. It's like, holy smokes, that's 30-0, and you're like, that just doesn't happen in
basketball. I've never heard of that happening, other than these games when it's, Kentucky is playing the season opener against Westminster.
Little Sisters of the Poor.
They ended up winning the game 98-40.
Yeah.
It's like, you just don't see 30-point runs, especially at this level.
This is the Elite Eight. Like, come on. It's been an incredible basketball tournament overall. But, yeah, I'm with you. And here's the thing. I picked UConn ahead of the tournament. Mm-hmm. I went with the chalkiest of the chalk picks you could go with. But I just looked at them. I'm like, you know what? They've got the feel of one of those teams that absolutely can repeat. It doesn't happen a lot in college basketball, but what they've done there at UConn is they've kept the guys together. They upgraded a couple of pieces around their star players, Donovan Kling and I think chief among them, and they've benefited. And they're running roughshod right now, and it just feels like they're on their way to a back-to-back title.
And Dan Hurley seems right now head and shoulders better than every other basketball coach. Now maybe that's just the talent he has.
He's pretty good.
Hey, he's gotten the talent. He's cultivated it. And then, like you said, he convinced Donovan Kling to come back. And they lost Jordan Hawkins, who was a lottery pick and was probably their best player last year, at least their kind of go-to scoring option. I know Klingon had a big tournament, but to lose a lottery pick and then come back and be this good, that's a sign of a good coach, and Dan Hurley is there.
Well, and he's got some chutzpah, I guess would probably the best way to say it, and he backs it up. That's the fun part about this. The Hurley family, we've all seen Bobby, obviously, at Arizona State, got all kinds of attitude and energy. But that is the thing about how this goes, is you look at what is going on with the college basketball universe. NIL, transfer portal, it's completely changed how things operate. I think we've seen that locally with our local teams, BYU, Utah State. But Dan Hurley, as you mentioned, he's kind of stands alone right now. He convinced Donovan Kling, hey, come back for another year, develop your game a little bit further, and you may find yourself even higher up in with regards to the NBA draft. And him convincing Donovan to do that has proven to be prophetic, and he's done what he promised him he would do. That's going to benefit UConn. This is a program. Remember, Jim Calhoun was running things for a long time there, and it seemed like routinely it was not necessarily a flashy style of basketball for UConn under Jim Calhoun.
Sure.
Highly, highly effective, yielded multiple national titles. Kevin Ollie got a title, and then things went by the wayside, and they had to kind of rebuild things, and Dan Hurley came in and got back to kind of the formula for success in stores, and man, are they looking special right now.
We'll see how long they can keep it up. I'm curious how college basketball transforms with the transfer portal, and if you can build these types of dynasty programs where, you don't have guys sticking around for 3 or 4 years. They're either one-and-done kids, or you're bringing in transfers from other schools. And, it's crazy where these kids are coming from. I mean, they're coming from all over to jump in and join these schools where in the past, like, I remember Rodney Hood transferred to Duke from Mississippi State. And it was well, that's pretty weird. Like, Duke doesn't need to take a lot of transfers. This is not what Duke
and
has to
don't.
Do.
They don't.
But going forward, all these teams are going to have to refill spots, especially if you lose, somebody like a Jordan Hawkins, we mentioned, maybe you can go out and find a gunner to step in and take that role.
Did you see the quote from Dan Hurley over the weekend?
I didn't.
Quote, our fan base is as obnoxious as bleep on social, so everyone hates us.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, tell us how it really is, Coach, but he's not wrong. Like, UConn fans, trust me, they're reveling in it right now, but that's the fun part about this is you love coaches who have some personality. We know the Hurley family, they're not short on opinions and that energy and their just the overall nature that they are. But it's going to be interesting, you're right, to see if you can build, because this is going to create a dynasty for UConn. Can Dan Hurley continue to kind of replace that and restock that talent? And it feels like to me, Ben, UConn's going to be a place that he absolutely is going to have to rely on transfers in this transfer portal era. I still feel like there are some programs, I'm thinking of the Kentuckys, the Kansases, the Dukes, that they can go out and bring in the McDonald's All-Americans and enough talent via the high school ranks where they probably don't have to rely on it nearly as much. And UConn feels like they're going to be a team like that that's going to have to kind of do opposite, where they're going to be like, okay, there's really good player at this university. Let's bring him in and add him to our core. And that's not a bad way to go about it, because guess what? It's what the future and the reality is of this sport. Mark Pope down at BYU, I can speak to this directly, has talked time and time again about how the transfer portal, and he uses the term integral to how BYU is going to go about building their roster. I would say that Craig Smith's thinking the same thing. We just saw what Danny Sprinkle did in one season with Utah State before he exited for Washington. And now it's up to Jared Calhoun to come in and carry on a pretty strong run there for Utah State. So it's not a perfect world. I know that drives fans insane because they have so many guys that seem to go in and out of their roster every year, and you're trying to get to know these guys, and it's hard to do that when it's as transactional as it's become. But guess what? That's what it is going to be. So embrace it and hope that your coaching staff and also your NIL fund has enough there in the pot.
Yeah, I'll be curious how it works. I just, you know, there's a couple of these kind of blue blood. I mean, they're blue blood teams that have survived. They are not getting there with a bunch of freshmen.
Yeah.
Like, UNC was really old this year. Duke even had, you know, Kyle Filipowski, who could have gone to the draft last year, probably would have been a pick in the 20s, but comes back for his second season, mm-hmm. and it's probably going to be a lottery pick now this year. So UConn's older. Like, they've got sophomores on the road. They're not old. Stephen Castle's still a younger player. Steph Castle's a younger player.
Sure.
But Klingon's in his second year. Like, he's got a lot more experience. And then you see some of these teams that didn't last very long. Now, then again, you know, Kansas went out and got Hunter Dickinson, who I thought was going to be a much better and bigger impact player for them, and got bounced pretty early in the tournament.
The thing about it is the whole old adage, get old, stay old. I know that it's still very much something that people want to do. I think it's more about experience, Ben. You talk about the fact that you have a Donovan Klingon who's got a second year in a program. You know what? That's enough experience at that point. With as many games as college basketball players play, they get that experience pretty quickly, and they do a lot of off-season work and the like. So it'll be interesting, but you're right. The era of the John Calipari putting five freshmen together, the Fab Five, like, I'm not sure those are going to break through very often. It's going to be more experienced teams. But even, as you mentioned, with UConn, where it's a bunch of sophomores, well, guess what? That's a second year in a program. That's enough experience at that point to make your run.
And we may get the occasional super freshman that comes through. You know, had Victor Wembanyama played in college basketball last year, I suspect whichever team he played for would have been dominant. Then again, Chet Holmgren's very good and didn't do a whole lot that was all that noteworthy as a player at Gonzaga, even before becoming the number two overall pick. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to have Tim Lacombe join us coming up at 11 o'clock. Top three stories at KSLSports.com. Coming up next, stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day. This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5
The KSL Sports Zone. Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Top three stories. Quickly, nominate your youth sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at KSLSports.com/contest. And listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. All right, Sarah, what's first?
Number one, Jazz GM Justin Zanuck is to undergo a kidney transplant.
Yeah, the story came out this morning. Jay-Z going to be getting a kidney transplant tomorrow. Obviously, first and foremost, extending our best to him and his family. I quite enjoy Justin Zanuck. Enjoyed getting to know him. He's one of the weird, like, faces of the Jazz that have been here for a long time. I mean, he got here in 2012. And
I think, what, 1 or 2 year hiatus?
A couple of years in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee, then came right back.
But it's 2024. I mean, he's been here for more than a decade now, been certainly around the Utah Jazz, and has had a really big impact on the team. So, hoping for the best for his health, talking to Justin. It sounds like early in October, just before his 49th birthday, you know, they'd been traveling all over the world scouting and going to Australia and going to all these different basketball tournaments and having a draft. And he came back and his wife had said, "Hey, you just seem tired."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, yeah. I'm traveling, I'm circumnavigating.
I've gone across the Pacific Ocean twice in a month.
I am tired. And she said, yeah, go get a physical. And, you know, now he recognized this could be an issue. His father has kidney issues. It's called PKD.
Yeah, polycystic kidney disease.
So he recognized that this could be something in his future, but said he felt fine. Said he felt mostly like nothing was all that wrong other than, yeah, I'm tired because I have an intense job that requires me to work 70 hours a week or more. I'm sure he'd scoff at 70 hours a week. So he goes and he gets a physical and everything comes back normal except for his kidneys, which, you know, Jake, you and me, healthy kidneys probably functioning at 90%.
Yeah, you hope.
His were at 14%.
Well, and that's the thing about this. What I've learned about kidney disease, I've got a friend who's dealt with stuff. It's not the same thing, but here's the thing. Kidney disease, it's a silent thing. You don't realize it because 8 years between a physical and Kate, that's one thing. Like, his wife convinced him. He's like, I was feeling fine. Like I said, I was a little bit tired.
Right.
But you don't anticipate, you know what I'm going to have? I'm going to have my kidneys in failure. Yeah, right. Like that. So best wishes to Justin. He's part of that trend of guys who were an agent that have made the transition into NBA front offices, but he has made an incredible adjustment in that. And I also really liked in the, this goes to, the, I think, ESPN story. I was reading, like, I read yours, I read the ESPN, I read the one from the Jazz. And in it, there was one point pointed out that he has been more than willing as a GM, because GMs have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. We all know this. They're negotiating these deals. But he has been very happy to let Ryan Smith as the owner, Danny Ainge as the CEO, and Will Hardy as the head coach to kind of be, as they said, the touchstones of this franchise, where he kind of operates in the background. And that can take a lot for certain people to do it. But Jay-Z, as PK likes to call him all the time, he has done a very good job about just being, you know what, you guys be out there in front. I'm going to be back here doing my thing.
Yeah, I will tell you, all of these trades, all of this stuff, the architect is Justin Zanuck.
He's
good making
at what
he does. Phone calls. Yeah. He's the one who's getting all these things to the finish line, and then Danny Ainge, Ryan Smith, the rest of the brain trust comes in and says, "Hey, like, yes, this is the best option. This is what we like." Mm-hmm. But Justin Zanuck has been integral in what the Utah Jazz have been doing. So extending our best to him, his family. He's got some kids too. So sending our best to Justin Zanuck. Having the surgery tomorrow. Says he expects to be back before the draft, so a couple of weeks laid up. He's got to make sure that everything works out. And it's pretty amazing. One of the things we learned about was the National Kidney Registry, which allows you to get on a donor list. But instead of me just being like, oh, well, I have to ask my friends and family if I have an identical match randomly that can do it, as long as somebody is willing to donate in my name, I'm on this registry, and I can get it from anyone in the country who's in a similar situation where they need somebody who – they know somebody who needs a kidney.
Good
and
Samaritans.
They might not be the good match, the perfect match. But, yes, they're a good Samaritan. So it goes from, oh, well, I've got a social circle of 20 people to, oh, well, I've got a national registry with tens of thousands of people on it. Mm-hmm. The odds of me finding a match now increase dramatically, and that's the case with Justin. So excited for him that he got the he's getting the transplant, and that worked out before he had to go on dialysis or anything. And then we'll keep him up to date.
Yeah, and the thing about this is he is going to continue to be a big part of what they're doing in this franchise. Don't think that this is going to cause him to take much of a step back. He'll be in the hospital to make sure that the transplant takes and all that stuff, but knowing how Justin has operated during his time, he'll be back at it pretty quickly, and he'll be going as hard, if not harder, than ever.
And look, the Jazz are 2 weeks away from doing pre-draft workouts.
Yep. So
if they haven't started already, but it's going to happen.
The scouting's been underway for quite a while. But the actual, like, having guys show up in Salt Lake City is going to be starting very, very quickly.
All right, Sarah, number two.
Number two, BYU wraps up spring football.
A very quiet spring football, which, again, at this point is probably good. Now, it was muddied a little bit or quieted, suppressed a little bit, just because BYU was in the NCAA tournament, and that was exciting. So
it covered a lot of it,
That's where our focus was, which has not been the case a lot over the last decade, unfortunately, with our local college football teams and college basketball teams. But also it means that there was no significant injuries. Like, you didn't lose your potential starting quarterback or a potential starting running back to a knee or a broken arm or something. Certainly nothing that's going to last into the summer and then maybe to the beginning of the season. So obviously the big question is, what's BYU going to do at quarterback? I thought it was interesting to hear A-Rod say they're not going to go out and get another transfer quarterback. This is the group that they're running with. And am I wrong? It sounds like Retzlaff was the guy.
I would say the leader in the clubhouse is Jake Retzlaff. I think he will be the guy barring something unforeseen. You're right. It was... A-Rod was emphatic. He was, Mitch asked him. Mitch was right off my left shoulder and said, hey, are you going to look at the transfer for another quarterback? And A-Rod said no. And they had made similar comments in the lead up to spring ball that they were not anticipating that. But I had the same question. If Mitch wasn't going to ask it, I was going to ask the question, because you want to kind of get a feel for, okay, 15 practices later, a month after this, do you feel like you have the horses you need? And then at the quarterback position, it's an outsized role in terms of the success of a football program. And he was emphatic saying, no, we're not going to do it. So that screams to me that, yes, they are content with, looks like, Jake Retzlaff and or Gary Bohannon being the guy. Gary Bohannon is getting closer to having his full arm strength. He said it's been a process. We talked with him as part of the spring wrap-up, and he said that it's been a long, arduous process. He spent 6 months, Ben, by the way, not being able to throw a football. He's six months without any, and he came back, started throwing tennis balls, and then upgrading to a youth football. Uh-huh. And it's really, he said it's taken him almost a full year to kind of get back to where he feels like he's at. I don't think it's fully back yet, so that leads me to think, based on what I saw slash A-Rod saying, that Jake Retzlaff, who threw no interceptions through 15 practices, yeah, I think it's Jake's job to lose.
I am not going to hold BYU to no transfer quarterbacks. If right name presents itself, go out and get him. You don't have to stick to this.
Sure.
If you can improve, I tell you the best advice I ever got. I was in line at a car parts place, and a guy behind me asked me if my car was for sale. Mm-hmm. And I said no. And then after I got my little car part or whatever it was, another guy in line came up to me and said, hey, buddy, your car is always
it's
for sale.
It's always for sale, yeah.
I was like, oh, you're not just talking about my car. You're talking about everything. You can always improve. You can always look to improve things, and you should never say no. I didn't even know what the guy was going to offer me for my car.
Sure.
I just said no.
Yeah.
Mistake. So I learned something from this random person at the auto parts store. To that point for BYU, look, if the right QB comes along and says, hey, man, A-Rod did a lot for two quarterbacks who are now in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I want to have that same opportunity. Yeah, your car is for sale.
Well, and here's the thing. Let's use the example, Jackson Dart. Now, Jackson was a star here in the prep ranks. And let's say a guy his caliber, we're talking he's an all-SEC caliber quarterback who's going to have an NFL future. If that type of quarterback came onto the market in the spring portal period, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, the portal opens up on the 15th, so about 2 weeks away from that opening up. If one of those guys came on the market and for whatever reason they had interest in BYU, I use Jackson Dart because he had the connection to BYU before ultimately going to USC and now Ole Miss. If that caliber quarterback came on the market and said, hey, I am interested in going to BYU and playing football, you can guarantee that Kalani Sitake, A-Rod, anybody in that program is like, yes, come on over, let's chat. Because you're right. You have a price, I guess is the best way to say it. But if you find the right guy, absolutely, you'd open it up and say, yeah, we'll take you.
So good for BYU. Nice to get through spring football unscathed.
On the injury front, by the way, they've had a number of injuries, but no season ending. They had a very physical camp. Trust me, I saw a lot of guys in slings with braces, boots, that type of stuff all throughout spring, and a number of guys that have notable names. But the good news is it sounds like there are no season-ending injuries. So that is the positive. They kind of ran the gauntlet of playing physical football, getting guys ready for the Big 12, while at the same time avoiding long-term, really impactful type injury.
All right, Sarah, number three.
Number three, Utah State hires Jared Calhoun as a men's basketball coach.
Yep, coming over. They announced this over the weekend. What did it end up being, about a week vacancy?
Roughly, yeah. They made moves very quickly to make sure it was shored up really, really quick.
Another younger coach.
Yeah,
42 for Jared Calhoun. So they didn't go the older route with the idea that someone will stick around. Now that doesn't mean Jared Calhoun can't stick around, but I guess you do put yourself in a spot where, if he wins a lot, he's going to get another big job offer, but has led Youngstown State to back-to-back 20-win seasons. He's got 7 20-win campaigns overall in his career. Good for Utah State. I suspect, I can't guarantee this, we will hear him on the station in the not-too-distant future.
So, as I understand, I believe they're supposed to have an introductory press conference, I think, tomorrow or Wednesday.
Okay.
So, I would anticipate Hans and Scotty will be up there at that, because Scotty being the play-by-play voice, I want him involved. So, here's the thing. This is an interesting pick because this goes back to more of Diana Sabo's roots out there in the Midwest. This is a guy who's a native of Ohio, Youngstown State, based in Ohio. Goes from, you mentioned those two back-to-back 21 seasons with the Penguins. That's a pretty good mark. And also the conference mark, 29-11. So this seems like more of kind of the trend we've seen with Utah State in the recent past. Think about what they did. Craig Smith, younger coach, good run, gets the job at Utah. You bring Ryan Odom in. Ryan wasn't necessarily as adept at wanting to stay in Logan and out west, so he went back to VCU on the East Coast. Now we see Danny Sprinkle, one season off to Washington. Well, Jared Calhoun's going to be thinking like, hey, I'm going to make it 4-for-4 here. I'm going to use this. I'm going to springboard myself up to – is it now the Power 5 level with the Pac-12 going away, Ben? So
yeah.
In basketball, it's in the Power 6. Yeah. So he's got to be thinking, like, hey, 1, 2, 3 years here, and if everything goes according to plan, I could find myself making a bunch of money at a big program. And the nice part is it looks like, I just saw this come across, that Isaac Johnson, who's their star five-man, the mm-hmm. prep star from American Fork, posted, we're not done yet. So it means at least, as they call him, Fish might be sticking around.
Big Fish?
Yep.
Sticking around? Good for him.
So that's one piece, at least, for Calhoun, like to think, okay, I have my stretch five, at least, on the roster for me.
Yeah, Youngstown State, by the way, was in the NIT tournament. They were second in the Horizon League this year, behind Oakland, who had the big run in the NCAA tournament.
Golkey.
With Golkey.
What's his first name? It starts with a J.
Everyone just needs Golkey.
Yeah, but
Jared?
Yeah. Jared, yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe. I can't remember. But yeah, Golkey, the sharpshooter from Oakland.
The three-point specialist.
Way, not Oakland, California.
No.
Oakland, Michigan.
Yeah, their coach has been on the sideline of that program for 40-some-odd years, and yeah, they... Yeah, but anyways, this will be a fun thing to have. The report said that Calhoun's going to have more NIL resources and the backing of the athletic department than anybody else. That was a bit of a bone of contention, it sounded like, for a guy like Danny Sprinkle. He felt like he was promised one thing and got less than he anticipated. But, hey, Danny Sprinkle in one season, what a job he did, and he's cashing in by going to Washington, and now Jared Calhoun gets to kind of pick up the reins and see what he can do.
So congratulations to Utah State and Jared Calhoun. Look forward to getting to know him better and see what type of program he runs up in Logan. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we can get into some Jazz basketball. They played better last night, some promise from the rookies as well. Tim Lacombe will join us coming up at 11 o'clock. Stick around. More Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. 50 segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier window and door retailer, combining beauty and technology on windows and doors since 1993. Give them a call today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. That's 801-566-1255. Also want to remind you, it is Monday. Sarah usually doesn't know how days work, but I want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday. Don't miss your chance to win tickets every week on the KSL Sports Zone. This week on Win Ticket Wednesday, win a pair of tickets to see Tim McGraw coming up at the Delta Center April 5th, so soon. All KSL right. Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win.
All right, Ben. There's not many things worse I would imagine on a flight than what I'm just reading happened to a United Airlines flight.
Okay.
En route from San Francisco to Frankfurt, Germany, was forced to divert due to an overflow from one of the aircraft's toilets into the passenger compartment.
Boo.
I don't want to talk Jazz,
boo.
But...
Boo.
Come on now.
First of all, I think planes always have issues, right? Like, I know Boeings are apparently falling apart at the seams and all these issues. I do think we get to a place where we're recognizing now, like, okay, so there was the tragedy in Baltimore about the bridge, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get a bunch of bridge stories. Like, it doesn't matter the size of the bridge. Like, it could be a little footbridge. If anything happens to it, people are going to be like, our bridge is on the collapse.
Infrastructure is falling apart. Yeah.
So I think we are getting a lot more plane stories than usual because of all the issues at Boeing, but it's not reassuring. Yeah. It doesn't make me feel better.
I don't want to, and here's the thing, San Francisco to Frankfurt, that's a long-haul flight.
Yeah, where were you over the ocean? When
the story
happened?
Is paywalled, so I can't see, the idea that I'm like, oh, that's rough.
I mean, hopefully they were still over the mainland U.S., I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you just say, you know, did they take a vote, like a head count of being like, do we just want to finish? Do we just want to go?
How close are we?
Everyone just plug your nose, and we'll just just get it done. We'll light some candles in the cockpit and just move on.
Light some incense and call it a day. Let's go.
Horrendous.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk Jazz.
Similarly, the Utah Jazz have lost 9 in a row. Longest losing streak for the Jazz since 2014. It's now tied for the 5th longest losing streak in franchise history. Technically 4th, but they've had 2 11-game losing streaks also. So 4 other losing streaks longer. And after last night's loss, Jake, the Jazz are guaranteed to have a 3rd consecutive season with a worse winning percentage than the previous year.
Okay.
It's technically the 5th time it's happened, but the last 4 times it happened in a 5-year span, so they happened back to back to back. So that happened.
Got it, okay.
1998, the Jazz make the finals. 99, they're worse than 98. 2000, they're worse than 99. 01, they're worse than 2000. 2002, they're worse than 2001. Mm-hmm. So it was really kind of one natural decline, and it coincided with, I don't want to say a fun era of Jazz basketball, but a romantic era of Hornacek retires,
sure.
John and Carl are aging. Like, it was the final years of Kobe. It was the final years of Dirk Nowitzki. It's just like, you accept that this is going to come to an end,
mm-hmm.
and the teams are going to slowly get worse, but you're still enjoying and savoring the 2 greatest players in franchise history. So it wasn't quite as shocking as, oh, you have the best record in the NBA at 50-22 in the 2020-2021 season, and then over the next 3 years you get progressively worse to the point where you're having the worst season in a decade and might end up with their fewest wins in a very long time. They are not playing well.
Trust me, you and I, we're on social media. We see the outrage that is coming from Jazz fans, but I think that the trend downwards, you're right. They went from having the best record in the NBA, they get bounced in that playoff series, and who would have thought, as you mentioned, 3-4 years later that they are like as down as they are? And there are Jazz fans out there on both sides of this. Why are they tearing this down to build it back up? Or they should have tanked outright last year. You see what Victor Wembanyama is doing for San Antonio. They can't even tank right. It's okay. Here's the deal. The Jazz are trying to execute a plan that they, I think, have thought long and hard about. We talked about Justin Zanuck a little earlier on in today's show, and obviously best wishes to him as he deals with his kidney transplant here. But Danny Ainge, Ryan Smith, Justin Zanuck, and every other decision maker that's on the board, I guess we can call it, sitting around that round table. Will Hardy's included in that, I'm sure, to a level. They're all on the same page. They know what they're trying to execute here. Is it ultimately going to work out? Well, that's years down the line, looks like, in terms of the final outcome of this. But I think that I don't want to use the trust the process because that's Philadelphia. They co-opted that phrase. But I just...
And didn't do it particularly well.
No,
actually.
They did not at all. They had one plan and it went completely haywire and ended up yielding themselves a generational superstar in Joel Embiid at the end of it. But nonetheless, you look at it and it's frustrating to watch how they're playing right now because, in all honesty, I think every Jazz fan within the sound of our voice is looking at this team right now, Ben, saying, we've got to play, we got 7 or 8 games left?
7 games left.
Yeah. We got to play 7 more games?
Yeah.
We got to endure 7 more of this? Could this be a 16-game losing streak potentially if they lost out? It's not ideal in that respect because it leaves a bad taste in everybody's mouth. But the reality is the Jazz are trying to execute something here, and for the second straight year, they actually were better than I think they anticipated roster-wise. You and I have talked about this on the show previously when I filled in. Is they thought they were weaker roster-wise going into a season the last 2 years and had to make moves at the trade deadline to essentially knock them down to where they're like, hey, we can accumulate assets and we can continue to execute this rebuild without having it be interrupted by a team that overachieves.
They do not believe that they even have the ability to bottom out. So I know a lot of fans are like, well, why didn't you tank harder for Victor Wembanyama? I do think that was the plan. And then it just so happened that Lowry was too good and you still had Mike Conley around. And I think Mike Conley was there just to kind of be a vet. And all of a sudden he and Lowry were winning games at a 500 rate. Yeah. And it was like, okay, well, that's not exactly the design, but Lowry's really good. So I guess we got to figure out what we have here. And then this year was very similar. How good could Lowry be without Mike Conley? And they took that learning experience and decided, still need to add more lottery talent. Mm-hmm. And so they pulled the plug at the trade deadline, added the more picks that we know about and have talked about quite a bit. But this is not a team that is going to continue to get worse. I don't see the Jazz, and I've been told this is not the plan, bottoming out. They are not going to try and hit rock bottom next year with Cooper Flagg or the year after with the Boozer Twins coming in. The Jazz want to build around right now and then set themselves up to improve by developing these young players and then when these trades become available. And I asked Justin Zanuck at one point, what is the plan? Because that's been a narrative. There's no plan. A lot of people think that. I said, what's the plan? He said, the plan's to get better. Like, simply put, the plan is to get better. So I would expect the Jazz to try to add this offseason.
Do you think that is, I don't know, is it the they go all in on this draft, try and find some pieces, or are we talking executing, using some of these draft picks and those assets to accumulate some talent via trade?
I kind of feel like they're going to add at least one more young player.
Okay.
And I think maybe you do that with your top 10 pick. And then if you package these two and move out of the draft, either for a player or just to kick the can down the road so you get another draft pick. Like maybe you trade the 31st pick and this year's 28th pick for another team's top 15 protected pick a year from now.
Okay.
And then the Jazz say, well, yeah, we don't own our own pick next year. It's going to go to Oklahoma City, but we have another pick that's only top 15 protected on top of the Minnesota pick, on top of the Cleveland Cavaliers pick. And then you have three picks again next year. It just continues to have a lot of wiggle room and a lot of, I could see them doing something like that because, man, and we'll talk about to Tim Lacombe about the three rookies who we saw last night and all played pretty well. You can't add three more rookies to there's just not room.
No.
There's not room to add three more rookies. There was barely room to add these guys, which is why two of them, including the number 9 overall pick, have only played the second half of the season. So I think they want to get better. I think you're going to see, if the opportunity presents itself, some trades to try and make the roster better.
Well, and that's, I think that would engender some confidence that yes, there is a plan. Because you're right, the nerve other, they're flying by the seat of their pants. It's like, oh, okay.
Nobody does that at a $1 billion business. Nobody does that.
No, they don't. But you're right. The nice part is they have the versatility. If they want to go all in this offseason, they can do that. If they want to go all in next year, they have that versatility in terms of the assets they've accumulated to when they want to push the chips into the middle of the table, and they don't have to push all of them in because, trust me, they've got enough chips to really...
It would be hard to push them all in one offseason.
Yeah, but
it's a lot of money.
But you can cash in a significant portion if you feel like, hey, it's there, go get it. And that's what they've kind of built up. They call it the war chest that they've built up. They have it, and when they want to utilize it, that's the big question, it feels like.
3-20 since the trade deadline. Okay. So a rough stretch, as rough as any in a very long time.
Yeah.
And will probably surpass the worst stretch of the...
How many wins do you think down the stretch here?
Oh, I think they're going to lose out.
I that's what I'm kind of feeling too. I think maybe one... there's like one night, maybe the other team has an off night and the Jazz spring one on somebody. But honestly, the caliber of opponent as well.
They're all very good.
It's like, whew, yeah, it could be a 16-game losing streak.
All right, Tim Lacombe joins us next. We'll talk Jazz basketball. We'll talk some Final Four as well. Stick around. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.